Thank you, Mr. Lawson. That was a beautiful hymn we just sang. Good to see your smiling faces. Well, this week I scanned an entire manuscript that my father sent me from Australia. The manuscript was typewritten by his aunt in Germany. It was 200 pages, and it's a story of how she survived in the Second World War as a Jew living in a small village near Dusseldorf. And in that story, there were recollections of how life changed for them and how they became refugees and how families were separated and some were killed. She lived in a small village with a Christian husband and lived the whole war with her two children. Her husband died serving in the German Eastern Front. But that story kindled for me an interest in refugees, and I did a little bit of searching this week on the refugee crisis in the world. And I'll just read some stats for you. These totals a number of people are refugees either displaced in their country or who have left their country. So in Afghanistan, and I've got pages of countries here, and I'm only reading those where there's more than a million people. So in Afghanistan, there's 1.5 million. In Colombia, 4.7 million. In the Congo, 3.2 million. Iraq, 1.3 million. Myanmar, 1.4 million. Pakistan, 2.6 million. Somalia, 1.1 million. Sudan, 2 million. Syria, 4.6 million. And the total that they give, and this is for mid-2013, is a total of 38,600,000 refugees. That's a lot of people. And I stumbled across a website. Actually, I read a news article about the refugees moving into Jordan from Syria. And there's many refugees moving to Lebanon, Turkey, Iraq, and Jordan. But Jordan seems to attract a lot of attention because they have the biggest refugee camp. And that's not containing all the refugees. Most of the refugees went to the cities first and then overflowed, and then they set up the Zaata refugee camp. Let me just get that pronunciation. Zaatari refugee camp in Jordan. The satellite image of that camp is not current, but it's just mind-blowing to see a city of tents. There's almost 200,000 people there. Here's some comments from some refugees. This is a refugee in Iraq from Damascus, a woman aged 59. She says, "We need medical treatment and follow-up for people with special needs. I have three disabled children and I need support." Issam, 38, married with three children from Damascus, living in Lebanon, says, "We're paying $600 for the land rental and we are always threatened with eviction in case we can't pay the rent. Why can't someone pay for us?" In Lebanon, it's a particular problem because those refugees cannot work. They're stateless. They're not Syrian and they're not Lebanese. Here's another one, Ahmed, age 18, from Dara Seal, and he's currently in the Zaatari camp in Jordan. He says, "World leaders and human rights organizations under the auspices of United Nations should enter and reach the besieged and the most violent areas and help our brothers who are dying of starvation, diseases, cold and fear." So he's saying, "I've got it good in the refugee camp. What about those thousands and millions that are left in Syria?" So why talk about refugees here in America at church? Of all places at church, why talk about it? The reason is because we're all going to be either refugees or refugee camp managers. That's kind of a strange statement, but follow with me. Let's look at our spiritual parallel, and that we've come out of the world and our citizenship is in heaven. And we're pilgrims. We don't have residency. We're waiting for the kingdom to come. And in some ways, God's called us out of the world into the church. It's like our camp, our refugee camp, where we're nurtured and helped. And the lessons that we learn here, we then go out into the world to heal the world as a refugee camp manager. You might ask, how so? Why would we be refugee camp managers? So that's the title of this message, is Prepare to be a Refugee Camp Manager. And there are four opportunities for us to be involved with refugees through different ages from this point on, in different scale and in different environments and with different varying levels of Satan's influence. There's four opportunities. Here they are. The first one is in the end times. We can get caught up in the refugee action due to weather, war, economic collapse. We saw Hurricane Katrina put many people homeless. Let's look at Revelation 9, have a look at some of the prophecies about what's going to happen in the world. Revelation 9 and verse 13 through to 21. This is the sixth trumpet and the second woe. And the sixth angel sounded, and I heard a voice from the four corners of the golden altar which is before God, saying to the sixth angel which had the trumpet, loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. And the four angels were loose, which were prepared for an hour and a day and a month and a year, for to slay a third part of men. Now this is a coming prophecy. A third of mankind dead. Imagine the problems that that's going to create. Verse 17. Actually, verse 16, and the number of the army of the horsemen were 200,000, that's 200 million, and I heard the number of them. And thus I saw the horses in the vision, and them that sat upon them having breastplates of fire and of jacinth and brimstone, and the heads of the horses were as heads of lions, and out of their mouths issued fire and smoke and brimstone. And by these was a third of part of man killed by the fire and the smoke, and by the brimstone which issued out of their mouths. For their power is in their mouth and in their tails, for their tails are like unto them serpents, and had heads, and with them they do hurt. And the rest of the men which were not killed by these plagues, yet repented not of the works of their hands, that they should not worship devils and idols of gold and silver and brass and stone and of wood, which neither can see nor hear nor walk. Verse 21, neither repented they of their murders, nor of their sorceries, nor of their fornication, or of their thefts. So we're seeing a very unrepentant world, and God's punishing the world. It's a great tribulation. Let's go to chapter 16, Revelation 16, and verse 10. And the fifth angel, this is plague number five, it says, the fifth angel poured out his vial upon the seed of the beast, and his kingdom was full of darkness, and they gnawed their tongues for pain, and blasphemed the God of heaven because of their pains and their sores, and repented not of their deeds. And in verse 21, and there fell upon men a great hail out of heaven, every stone about the weight of a talent, and the men blasphemed God because of the plague of the hail, for the plague was exceeding great. There's going to be dramatic devastation in this world. And if we are in a place of safety, we are going to be refugees in a sense. We're going to be separate from the world if we go to a place of safety. We're going to need those skills to survive as refugees. So that's the first opportunity in the end age. The second is, let's go to Matthew 24. Matthew 24 and verse 21 kind of blends into that first opportunity. It says, "For then shall be a great tribulation such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be." So after the great tribulation, there will be nothing like it ever again. And we know as a result of Satan's rule, this is all a part of Satan's rule on this earth, culminates on Christ's return. And that's the second opportunity that we get to be refugee camp managers, because the whole world will be a refugee camp and it'll be our job to care for them. Let's look at Revelation 5. Revelation 5 and verse 10, and has made us unto our God kings and priests, and we shall reign on the earth. So in the millennium under Christ's rule, we will be reigning under Christ on earth, caring for these people. So that's opportunity number two. If that wasn't enough, we have a third opportunity. Well, we actually have two more opportunities. The next one, number three, is at the end of the millennium, we will again have to clean up after Satan's revolt. And we can see that in Revelation 20. Revelation 20 and verse 7. "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea. And they went up to the breadth, went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city. And fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them." So again, devastation on earth. People needing healing and repatriation, feeding, looking after them. That's the third opportunity. We've got one more after that too. In Revelation 20 and verse 11, in the second resurrection. "And I saw a great white throne and him that sat on it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away, and there was found no place for them. And I saw the dead, small and great, stand before God, and the books were opened." So the dead were resurrected. All those people who never had a chance to learn God's way are now resurrected and taught God's way of life. And they're resurrected like it was just waking up from their death. All those people who died in wars, it says in verse 13, "And the sea gave up the dead which were in it." So those people who drowned in the sea, who were shipwrecked, who their ships went down and they clung for life but died, they'll be resurrected. Their last memory was fighting for life, maybe in the hull of a ship, running out of air, boat filling up with water, not being able to get out. There's going to be terror. There's going to be a lot of hurt people with a lot of beliefs that are going to have to be addressed. A lot of hatred for other races and people that have just maybe tortured and killed them. So we have four opportunities to be refugee camp managers. Right now in the world, there's a lot of organizations that help with refugees, and I sourced a refugee camp manager manual from the Norwegian Refugee Council. It's a 600-page manual, and here I've got 15 pages of contents. I'm just going to read you the chapter headings, which gives you a little bit of an idea what's involved nowadays in camp management. So what is camp management? Just explains. Chapter 2, roles and responsibilities. Chapter 3, participation and community involvement. Chapter 4, coordination. 5, information management. 6, environment. 7, camp setup and closure. 8, protection in a camp setting. Chapter 9, registration and profiling. Chapter 10, prevention of and response to gender-based violence. 11, protection of persons with specific needs. Chapter 12, camp security and staff safety. Chapter 13, food distribution and non-food items. 14, water, sanitation and hygiene. Chapter 15, shelter. 16, healthcare and health education. 17, education. 18, livelihoods. And then there's a number of appendixes as well. So it gives you a bit of an idea what a camp manager has to do in caring for those people. So what will our role be when we care for these refugees? What will our role be? It'll be similar to what the United Nations do and those non-government organisations. But let's have a look at some of those things that we will be doing. It's a sure thing. We will be doing these things. We'll be caring for these broken, fearful, helpless people. So our mantra or our slogan could be, "There is a reason you are a refugee. Let me show you a better way." And that's our first major opportunity, is when Christ returns. Satan is put away. We don't have that influence. And we'll be nurturing those people back to health. So generally, in order of how we would do that, the first things first is providing for critical needs like food, water, shelter and medical care. So in the millennium, we're going to have a lot of injured people coming out of the millennium who are going to need their wounds fixed, their health, is their nutrition, malnourishment is going to have to be addressed. They're going to need somewhere to live. They're going to need clean water to drink. That's a major problem. When you look at Jordan and the refugees that are overwhelming their cities and refugee camps, there's just not enough water to go around. On the Jordanian website today is a banner that goes across the top saying, "Pray for rain." They desperately need rain so that the people in the country can drink. So food, water, shelter and medical care is a process. It's not going to just happen on day one. And the whole world's going to be a refugee camp. So you're not going to have United Nations sending tents and medical care and food. We're going to have to deal with what's there. And there's not going to be helpers. The refugees are going to have to help themselves. So we're going to have to organise those people into work parties to help each other, to help make shelters, to find water, to bring water, to bring food for fuel. We as camp managers are going to have to explain the basic biblical health laws about hygiene. Is to bury your waste. What comes out of your body gets buried. What clean foods to eat and what foods not to eat. How to cook your food to bleed animals, to get the blood out, to not eat the fat. We're going to have to explain to them and teach them about the value of human life almost straight away, even while they're building shelters. We're going to have to teach them about the roles between men and women. There's some boundaries. Unless you're married to that woman, you do not sleep with her. There's some boundaries that are going to have to be set up right from the beginning in those camps. There's an order for having sex. It's love, marriage, and sex. We're going to have to teach that. We're going to have to teach them to be faithful to their spouse. If they are married, we're going to have to teach them that you need to be faithful. It's just one. We're going to have to teach them to care for the elderly and the vulnerable, because they won't be able to help. They won't be able to gather their food. We're going to have to look after them. We'll have to teach them not to steal. I mean, in refugee camps now, you just imagine if I was there with my family and I needed to go and get some firewood or food, who would look after my family? And if our family went out to get food, would my tent be there when I got back? If I found a wood stove or gathered wood and left my tent, would it be there when I got back? Stealing is a big issue now. It's going to be an issue then. That's something we'll need to educate them. We'll need to teach them to speak up if you need help. Let us know if you need help. You know, in refugee camps, the ones that cry the loudest get the aid. But sometimes it's the ones who don't yell out, the ones that are sick, are going to need the help the most. We're going to need to teach them to show kindness to each other, to respect their family values, their parents and the elders. And we're going to have to teach them to serve others. So what happens at the end of the week when it comes to the Sabbath? We're going to have to teach them to rest on the Sabbath. We're going to have to teach them about the holy days. Let's go to Zechariah 14. And we know from Zechariah 14, when Christ returns, that the holy days will be kept. So Zechariah 14 and verse 16, it says, "And it shall come to pass that every one of you that is left of all the nations which came up against Jerusalem shall even go up from year to year to worship the King and the Lord of hosts and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. And it shall be that whosoever will not come up of all the families of the earth under Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, even upon them shall be no rain." So there's consequences for not attending those holy days. So we'll need to teach them about the Passover, the Days of Unleavened Bread, Pentecost. We're going to have to explain to them the forces of good and evil that resulted in what happened. To explain that there is a way of life that leads to peace and prosperity. We're going to have to explain the consequences of going down the two paths. If you obey God's law, these are the blessings. If you don't follow God's law, these are the curses. We'll be utilizing Deuteronomy 28 to teach them. In all of these four opportunities where we can help refugees, it will all be a result of Satan's rule on earth, every time. And we will have to explain that he is gone and will not be back, that this is the way to live. in the camps, as lives get together and things become a bit more stable, we'll have to encourage individual creativity and skills. It's putting people where they need to work, what their skills are. If they're good with their hands, maybe in construction. If they like farming, then growing food and raising cattle. Well, something very common in refugee camps now is seeking reconciliation and forgiveness. And this is a big topic for camp managers, is helping people to realize that some of the ethnic problems that they had, they can forgive and move on, that they can meet with those people and engage them as friends. So that's going to be big for us too, is teaching them forgiveness and to reconcile with those people that caused them to be pushed out of their homeland. And as the refugee camps flourish, we're going to have to plan permanent cities and incorporate agricultural sustainability. It's building cities that are friendly to the environment, that incorporate agriculture, that people grow their food. The transport networks are going to have to link those cities, but not in a way that takes away from daily life. There's going to be need for town planners, and I'm sure Christ will be drawing on our skills where we have in this day and age. So how are we planning now, right now, to be refugee camp managers? What can we do now, and what are we doing now? The good news is we're already doing a lot of these things. But I've got 7 points here in closing to help you prepare. Number one is having godly values. Because as a camp manager, our job as a refugee rehabilitation will involve applying God's values. So we need to live those values now. And to find those values, we need to read our Bible. We need to study our Bible, and we need to pray to God. We need to have a relationship with God to have those values. Number two, we need to be able to understand someone by listening and empathizing. We need to connect with people by listening to them and hearing their refugee story. It's understanding where they came from and understanding their path. Number three is being able to motivate others through example, and motivate them through encouragement and reassurance. Reassurance that it's safe now. You can build your home. You are safe to walk around the camp. To encourage them to get involved in the camp life, to help others. Number four, we need the courage to teach godly values. And that's a skill that we can take on now to teach others. And we can, it sounds like, well, how do we teach people godly values when it's not our mandate to do that now? People aren't called into the church, but how can we do that? Well, we can teach godly values by being a good example right here and now. We can teach them from our experiences. We can say, well, when I was struggling that way, this is what I did. We can teach them through questions. It's, how will you get on if you treat that person badly? Will that work? And we can teach through stories. In the church, we read the Bible, and it's full of stories. It's full of examples on how to live, and we can teach those stories. Number five, we need to be able to say no to people. in the here and the now. No, that is the wrong way. This is the way. No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to work on the Sabbath. We need to have the strength to be able to do that now. Number 6, by caring for our families, our congregation and our community, now we're preparing for those times when we care for others. Let's just have a quick look in Matthew 25. It's ironical that Christ picks these values and these things to qualify as refugee camp managers and beyond. Matthew 25 and verse 34 and verse 35 says, "Then shall the king say unto them on his right hand," these are those who are worthy, "Come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For when I was hungry and you gave me meat, I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you took me in. Naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me." So we can do that now by caring for those around us, our families, our congregation, our community. Number 7, what can we do now? Working hard to move from dependence to independence to interdependence. So there's a process. As we grow, from a child we're dependent. Our parents feed us. They give us everything we need. We can't really help others. Then we move to independence, where we are able to care for ourselves, but we're not yet caring for others. So we move from that independence to interdependence, where we relate to the people around us. Can you help me with this? Let me help you with that. So we become a group. And then there are times where we become dependent again. When we grow old, my dad's 84 and he's starting to have needs. He needs people to care for him. When we're sick, we need people to care for us. So the cycle continues. So as spiritual refugees now, we're preparing for the greatest humanitarian crisis that's about to happen. Our Lord and Savior is going to return shortly and enlist us to help rehabilitate those people and build a society from those refugees, a millennial utopia where life is going to be so amazingly beautiful. And in the second resurrection, those people are going to be resurrected to a beautiful world that we've helped recreate and rehabilitate. And then there'll be another chance for us to be refugee camp managers, to help nurture those people back to health and to learn about God. And in essence, when we rehabilitate people from refugees, we'll be teaching them how to become camp managers as well. So that's our destiny as refugee camp managers. All the best.